Ladies and gentlemen, when visiting Washington, D.C., be sure to check out our fine mass transit system.
On a cold and gray December morn, commuters in D.C. look so forlorn. In the metro.
In the metro.
And a tourist asks, will the red line take me to the blue? Do I look like a friggin' map to you? Of the metro.
Of the metro.
People, don't you understand? Tourists need a helping hand, or they'll ride on the metro rails all day. Will their memory of D.C. be nothing but the smell of pee? Coming from a guy who sits and works on his crochet, and a woman sighs, 'cause when the train's packed full, she starts to dread guys treating her butt like it's Wonder Bread. On the metro.
On the metro.
And so she tells those guys, hey, watch out, don't invade my space. But half of them are already to second base. On the metro. Then one day in desperation, she says she'll drive today. She hits the road in her car. Traffic sucks, so she doesn't get far before she starts to cry. And when the train goes by, she knows she's wrong, and she misses the chimes as they go. Bing bong.
Doors closing.
On the metro.
On the metro.
Just take metro.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Living in a Police State with Paul Butler. You can listen to this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Next call for Paul Butler comes from George in Baltimore. George, good morning.
Good morning, Professor.
Morning.
I was calling because earlier you was talking about the 115 people that was arrested in Baltimore. I live in Baltimore, and you probably know that some people don't ever really leave. Like, some people don't go to different states, different cities, things of that nature. So all they know is what they see here. So what you were talking about the police, things of that nature, a lot of times here, people fear the police. They either fear them or they have a certain distaste for them. That's because of the powers that you were saying given to you by your friend. They just abuse it. They just abuse it, and it's like, you lock me up today, but just hanging out with my friends. They call that loitering. You could say on the corner or in the neighborhood. Then over time, I build up a record, and then when I come to somebody in front of a court like you, then they try to give me 3 years or 4 years, and you just have to take it. Like, you don't have money to really fight your case, so you get a public defender who's not going to really support you like you need. Then you have to just either take this 2 years or take probation, which still is a conviction. It's just real unfair and just crazy here. And this is Baltimore. You said 615 people here.
George, are you talking from personal experience?
personal experiences and friends, I've been arrested before for things that was really, like I said, loaded. When I got arrested one time for trespassing in my neighborhood, just because it was like a gated community, but it was not a gated community that I had to enter a password or anything. I just could walk through. I parked my car in there, and I went to the store that was outside of the gated community. I went back to the gated community, and I was arrested. This was only across the street, and things like this happen here, so... I mean, you know, in places like this where it's 615 people, not in New York or California, our little small voices need to be heard.
Thank you, George. Paul Butler?
Yeah, you know, if you watch shows like The Wire or Homicide, you think of Baltimore as kind of ground zero for a lot of these problems. And I heard that young man's voice. I heard the pain in his voice. And again, we want him to be safe. And one of the ways to make sure that he's safe is for him to have a good relationship with the police so that he can talk to them about violent crime. And one of the earlier callers mentioned the concern about snitching that we hear in a lot of hip hop. And that actually started, that movement against snitching started in Baltimore. Again, it's part of this issue of how many people get arrested and caught up in the criminal justice system there. And the police were going to folks, and because people weren't willing to talk to them voluntarily, they were saying, if you help me make a case against your neighbor, then I'm going to give you a case. I'm going to give you a break in your case. And so, again, if you tell me what Joe's doing, then, you know, maybe for your criminal case, you won't have to serve so much time. And that was an incentive for a lot of folks to lie about their neighbors. Virtually every family in Baltimore has someone who's caught up in the system. So one of the concerns about snitching is that it leads to unreliable, inaccurate testimony.
O'Meal is calling from Brooklyn. O'Meal, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Professor. Good morning to you for having this program, sir. The law became interesting to me since my first arrest, 2010, in New York. I'm not certain if I'm a victim of Stop and Frisk, but it was 30 days before I went to Africa, and I was arrested responding twice to an officer command. And since then, I am pro se now in the matter in the Eastern Federal District of New York. And my only question is, if not the Constitution, what applies to African people globally? Is it human rights that we should be declaring? Because the Dred Scott case that I've just been reading on state that the Constitution doesn't apply to descendants of Africans. So I'm going to go and buy your book. But I've been reading on the law. I just got up and I saw you on the program. I was touched just based off of the topic. Because what I saw in Africa, I know it's not just an American issue. It's a global issue for melanated people. So I appreciate love that you had first-hand experience in terms of your prosecutional work, and then to know that you came out of that to come and educate those who needed the assistance. So,
O'Meal, did you say that your case was pro se?
I am pro se. I am currently in the Eastern Federal District of New York.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing your experience. You. Paul Butler, what does that mean, he's pro se?
That means he doesn't have a lawyer, so I can't give legal advice other than to say it's always a good idea to have a lawyer. So if it's a criminal case, he has a constitutional right to a lawyer. So O'Neill should know that Dred Scott has been overruled by the Supreme Court, so the Constitution absolutely applies to African Americans, including the Fourth Amendment, which says that they can't be stopped and frisked for no reason, and the Sixth Amendment, which says that if you can't afford a lawyer, the government will provide a lawyer for you in a criminal case.
But if he's been stopped for stop and frisk or stopped for search, is that a criminal case?
No. Then he again, that's how the police make criminal cases. But we know literally 99% of folks who get stopped, especially young black men who get stopped in New York, the police aren't able to make a case. They just let him go because they haven't committed any crime. So if he's concerned about that, there are lots of efforts underway to address that issue. So there was this famous civil case in New York that, again, the plaintiffs in that case, including a young black medical student who'd been stopped many times by the police for absolutely no reason, they won. That's good news. So that's also evidence to O'Neill that the United States Constitution absolutely applies to African Americans. So, you know, he's certainly entitled to bring a case for individual relief, but there's also an important community social justice movement to make the police in New York more accountable.
And you're writing a second book.
I am. So one of the things I'm looking at is this relationship between the police and black masculinity. Part of what Stop and Frisk was about was degradation. It was almost about sexual harassment. If you look at the way that folks were touched, a lot of people experienced it as invasions to their body. Black masculinity is something that some folks find threatening in the United States. But you know what? The caller was right. There are some crimes that African-American men do commit disproportionately, especially violent crimes. So what my next book is about black masculinity and its relationship to criminal justice.
David, Englewood, New Jersey, on our Republican line. You're on with Georgetown Law Professor Paul Butler.
Yeah, I have two questions and one quick statement. My question is, it's so easy for people like the professor to talk about letting all these people go. And I grew up in Chicago, too. I went to the school, University of Illinois, right near St. Ignatius. But I grew up on the south side of Chicago. But it's so easy, two questions are, it's so easy for him to talk about letting these people out of jail, but they're not going to go into his neighborhood. And I think he would have a different view if they were right around the corner from him. The second thing is, part of the problem is that people like him, liberals, never want people to escape these terrible schools. So they're all against school vouchers, which would give people an opportunity to go to the kind of school that he went to. I'm very familiar with that school. And my last thing is a statement, and that is the crux of the whole problem with black crime and problems and economic woes is the breakdown of the family. It's just totally broken down, and there are no fathers in these households. Even where I grew up, and I'm 58 years old, everybody from the worst people in the neighborhood to the people that were just clean as the white-driven snow had fathers in the house. And this was in the south side of Chicago. And now there's no fathers in these households, and the liberals just keep ignoring that big 800-pound gorilla in the room.
David, are you African-American?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Paul Butler.
So it's not like the fathers just disappeared, right? They went someplace, and where a lot of them went is to prison. So it's true that if you have a two-parent household, you're much less likely to go to prison than if you only have one parent in the house. So that's another reason why we have to be smarter in crime and to think carefully about whether it makes sense to lock up all of these people who are parents. About 60% of people in prison, men and women, do have kids. And one of the things that makes kids at risk for going to prison themselves is having a parent in prison. So it's this vicious cycle, and the caller's absolutely right that schools make a difference. So we want every kid to have the opportunity to go to a great school like I went to and like David went to. And again, he's right that it's all related. So when we talk about human rights issues and civil rights issues, we're also talking about prison conditions, and we're talking about ways to stop having so many people admitted to prison. And one way to do that is to improve the schools. Now, we can have a long argument about whether the best way to do that is by privatizing education, by vouchers, you know, school unions, all that. All of that's outside of my area of expertise. But I do know that great schools will prevent so many kids from ending up in jail.
Sean, please go ahead with your question or comment for Paul Butler.
Yes. Again, my name is Sean Coburn from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm a recovering addict and an ex-offender. I've been abstained from drugs for the last 20 years, and I've found it difficult to navigate my way through corporate society. I was a supervisor at UPS for 15 years, and I wanted to speak to you to point what he was saying about how it appears that African Americans commit more crimes based on statistics of what's being reported. And during my time in the corporate world, I was a supervisor. I was actually steered towards reprimanding and kind of creating a record for the African American employees as opposed to the white employees who were sent to the supervisor and had no record of incidents. So therefore, it created, you know, an easier outlet to you know, fire or get rid of these employees. So, of course, I'm no longer with this corporate entity. And my question is, in today's society, how do you create an environment where you can actually get these men back in the work? And I'm a part of a group called MOVA, Men of Valuable Action, here in Baltimore, and we're trying to create some type of liaison with the Baltimore government to help ex-offenders get back into work and create economic development. I'm also an economic development student at Saturna Douglas.
All right, Sean, thank you, sir.
Again, Sean sounds like a real success story. So he's someone who did his time, and he came out, and he actually was able to improve his life. So more power to you, Sean. You know, in terms of policies that help people, other folks have those outcomes, we know, again, that if folks can get jobs when they come out, and that's something where the president can make a difference. So we're thinking about African-American unemployment now, how it's persistently twice what white unemployment is. One big reason for that is that lots of African-American folks have records. So if there are targeted incentives to employers to hire people, to take a chance, and it's not much of a chance, because if people have a good job with a living wage, they're going to do the right thing. They're going to be very motivated, like that caller is, to turn around their lives. So we hope that in this recovery, people like Sean aren't left out.
I'd be very interested. Thomas Jefferson 8 tweets this in. I'd be very interested in hearing your opinion of the Trayvon Martin case.
I was disappointed in the verdict, as I think lots of African Americans were. So the idea that there could be this big guy who's basically stalking the skinny black teenager. The skinny black teenager doesn't have a weapon. The big guy has a gun. They get into a fight. The skinny teenager ends up dead, and the big guy gets off for self-defense. I mean, come on. I think that made a lot of folks have doubts about our criminal justice system and whether it really respects the lives of all of our citizens. It's a case, one of your callers mentioned earlier, the Dred Scott case, where the Supreme Court said that the black man has no rights that the white man is bound to respect. That case, the Trayvon Martin, really the George Zimmerman case, made some folks feel like that, like African-American lives didn't mean as much as the lives of other people.
And for the last hour, we've been talking with Paul Butler, who is a law professor at Georgetown, graduate of Yale, graduate of Harvard, former defense attorney, former prosecutor. His book is called Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice.
We are a flexible and innovative species, and we have the capacity to adapt and modify our behavior. Now, we most certainly have to do so if we're to deal with climate change. It's the biggest challenge we have yet faced.
The same thing that keeps the Earth warm.
CO2
may make the Earth too warm.
It holds in heat.
Methane, chlorofluorocarbons, water vapor, and carbon dioxide.
They all trap heat.
Methane, chlorofluorocarbons, water vapor, and carbon dioxide.
They all trap
heat. It is important that the world get together to face the problems which attack us as a unit.
The evidence is clear.
The globe is getting too warm.
We can avoid climate catastrophes.
We can do this.
We can change the world.
Science offers us answers
for these huge challenges.
It's one global ecosystem.
We can do this.
We can change the world.
Every single thing every one of us does,
affects everybody all over the world.
It's one global ecosystem.
Warm, wet, cold or dry, climates all start in the sky. Warm, wet, cold or dry, climates all start in the sky.
When the CO2 is high, the temperature is high, moving together in lockstep. When the CO2 is low, the temperature is low, moving together.
It is important that the world get together to face the problems which attack us as a unit.
The evidence is clear.
The globe is getting too warm.
We can avoid climate catastrophes.
We can do this.
We can change the world.
Science offers us answers
for these huge challenges.
It's one global ecosystem.
We can do this.
We can change the world.
Our use of fossil fuels for energy is pushing us towards a climate unlike any seen in the history of civilization.
Adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere warms things up. The rise in CO2 comes from burning fossil fuels. When you burn them, add oxygen, it makes CO2 that goes in the air. We're reversing the process by which they form. We're reversing the process.
We're talking about something that affects the entire earth. Problems that transcend nations. It is important that the world get together to face the problems which attack us as a unit.
The evidence is clear.
The globe is getting too warm.
We can avoid climate catastrophes.
We can do this.
We can change the world.
Science offers us answers
for these huge challenges.
It's one global ecosystem.
We can do this.
We can change the world.
When a crisis rocks the system, you can see them come to patch up the holes now. And they're always pushing policies that work out right for ruling class goals now. The Wall Street, you can hear them stress the need for controls now. But they'll be gone, gone, gone when the people take their power away. We're working out of Washington, they're drawing up a federal plan now. Then it's off to Santa Monica to spend some time consulting for Rand now. Where they tried to dream up ways to hide the rising cost of bombing Vietnam now. Gone, gone, gone when the people take their power away. They can't see the oppression cause they spend their time just shooting the bull now. They give a speech on hunger but they do it while their bellies are say it's getting better, but it looks like they're just pulling the wool now. And they'll be gone, gone, gone when the workers take their power away. They'll be gone, gone, gone when the workers take their power away.
Come to a close, and every flower in the garden glows. I know a place. Don't you know? I know a place. If you have faith, close your eyes, climb inside to that place. place, there's no space or time. I'm no place, and it's in my mind. I'm no place where no sorrow flows. I'm no place. Have you heard
peace on earth?
Can occur. CIA can't follow you. You'd love them to go with you to that place. And no place where beauty's truth, where poets don't have to jump off the roof. Rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief. Our masks are beyond belief, but I know a place. Don't you know? Close your eyes, take a ride to that place, to that place. I know a place. I know a place. I know a place.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.